Now stay tuned for the Sunday morning wake-up call on 94.7 WPVC-LP Charlottesville. The wake-up call is brought to you by Tiger Fuel and the markets of Tiger Fuel. Now here's your host, Rick Moore.
Everyone, thank you for being here with us. I hope everyone had a lovely Thanksgiving. Thank you for tuning in on the Sunday and for being here with us today. Our guest today, McCall Dempsey, she is the founder and executive director of an organization called Southern Smash. We're going to be talking about eating disorders. Seems appropriate for the holiday season, and especially after Thanksgiving, although possibly we should have talked about it before Thanksgiving, but we will be talking about it today. McCall, thank you for being with us. How are you?
I'm doing great, Rick. How are you?
I'm doing well, and I appreciate you taking an hour out of your time to be with us today. Let's start with what is just the simplest of questions, which is, what prompted Southern Smash? Tell me your story.
Well, I struggled with an eating disorder for 15 years. It started around the age of 15, and I struggled in silence for the majority of the time. And like so many other millions of people across the country, I didn't feel that I was thick enough or fit the stereotypical description of an eating disorder that we all kind of have this preconceived notion in our head that eating disorders are the starving celebrity on the cover of Us Weekly or Karen Carpenter. And while those very much are eating disorders at some level, that does not certainly define the whole picture. And so when I finally went to treatment at the age of 29, I left treatment and just knew I wanted to pay it forward. And a year and a half later, I started Southern Smash on just a whim and a crazy idea and a passion to pay it forward. And 5 years later, we are a 501c3 nonprofit, and we have Smash Scales and raise eating disorder awareness and education across the country.
So you say that you don't meet the standard visual image. But what is the visual, the standard stereotype of somebody with an eating disorder?
There is no standard type. It is such a myth that in order to have an eating disorder, you have to be underweight. And that is a huge myth. I once heard a professional say that in order to have an eating disorder, the only requirement is that you have a body. And as you can well know, we all have a body. So eating disorders know no bounds. They affect every age, race, gender, socioeconomic level. They truly know no bounds. And so it's really important to remember for anyone struggling, you can, help and support is available, and your sickness is valid, and you deserve help and treatment.
But let me rephrase my question. Again, our guest today, McCall Dempsey, founder of Southern Smash. Your organization is trying to teach people that their brain is telling them that their image is wrong. When you walk past someone in the street, what is that other person's image telling them? I mean, you are trying to tell them that anybody can have an eating disorder. What is my image? What is my brain telling me that only these people can have an eating disorder? Am I thinking that only really thin people can have an eating disorder, that only really overweight people can have an eating disorder, that only, and what is the American typical thought process on that?
You mean, I'm trying to understand your question. Are you referencing what is the myth and the stereotypes out there surrounding the illness of eating disorders?
Yes.
Multiple myths that are pretty standard across the board with eating disorders are that you have to be underweight, that you have to be a white, a woman, a female, a rich white girl. Rich white girl's disease is something that is often tossed around that is inaccurate. Another myth is that it only affects young females, which is also inaccurate. So those are just a few of the standard ones. And you know, it's not, you know, these illnesses affect over 30 million Americans. And that also, you know, majority are going to be diagnosed with binge eating disorder. And 35% of those binge eating disorder diagnoses are going to be clinically obese. So you are missing when we start looking and you know, only looking at stereotypes and not challenging ourselves to really understand the illness, you're missing a huge piece of people that are really struggling.
Again, our guest today, McCall Dempsey. She's the founder of Southern Smash. We're talking about eating disorders. Our interview today by phone, if you're hearing a few of the beeps in the background, that's why. McCall, again, thank you for participating with us today. I'm doing a lot of learning throughout the hour, so please, everybody, if I'm asking a few of the ignorant questions, which I'm constantly reminded, there are no ignorant questions. And
yes.
McCall Hardy told me that when we were talking earlier in the week. You were telling me a few moments ago that the myth is that eating disorders are, it falls upon thin, white, young, white women. Right? That's the myth. That's the
right.
Usual eating disorder. Is that the category that you fall in?
I am a white female, but I was not underweight.
How does a young white female teach the rest of the general public that eating disorders also fall into other categories? That older African American women can also have an eating disorder. That men can have an eating disorder. That, you know, that.
I mean, I am able to share my story. I'm not trying to share someone else's story, but when we have our panel discussions, we work really hard to have a diverse panel, and I work hard with many treatment centers to really bring to light the marginalized voices, whether it be African American, transgender, Native American, you know, all kinds of different populations. It's not, certainly not my job to represent them all, but, you know, just as though I learn from other people of different backgrounds about other issues, you know, we can all be teachers, and I am just trying to share my story in hopes that I can help one person to understand that they are not alone. It is not my job to be a clinical director or to, you know, to be anyone's therapist or nutritionist. It is just my job to plant a seed of hope in that someone will know that they are worth a life free from an eating disorder and free from really anything that ties them down.
Can you explain to myself and the listeners the definitions and the differences between some of the different eating disorders?
Sure. So you have anorexia, bulimia, binge eating disorder, and those are pretty much the three common ones that most people are educated on. Anorexia, somewhat a severe restriction of food, severely underweight. But that's not always the case. And so the new DSM-5, which is what clinicians use to diagnose, and it's for, you know, insurance purposes and whatnot, now says that you don't have to be under a certain BMI to be diagnosed with anorexia. So that was a big win there. Bulimia is in consuming large quantities of food and purging them, whether it's through self-induced vomiting, over-exercise, diet pills, laxatives, whatnot. Binge eating disorder, consuming large quantities of food, but not purging them as you would with bulimia. There's all different types of subclinical diagnosis that can fall under these, but for the most majority, those are what people understand. There are other illnesses like OSFED, other specified feeding eating disorders, and so that's kind of what I fell under, in that I never really landed long enough in anorexia or in bulimia to say, wow, this is what I get. So not everyone is perfectly, and most times, 9 times out of 10, you're not going to perfectly fit into that diagnostic code. OSFED is kind of like the catch-all. Then you have ARFID, which is avoidant restrictive feeding intake disorder. And you see that a lot of times in younger children, which doesn't always have to do with body image and the desire to be thin, but can come about through maybe some sensory issues as a child and whatnot. So there's a lot of research. There needs to be a lot more research, but they are making huge strides in research and in reaching all populations and all of those struggling.
Again, our guest today, McCall Dempsey. She's from the organization Southern Smash. She's the founder of the Executive Disorder, joining us today, the Sunday after Thanksgiving, taking time away from her family. Thank you very much.
Sure.
You said that you went back and forth between anorexia and bulimia? I'm, again, because I'm just trying to learn about the two of them, tell me more about that.
Sure.
And I guess I just want to hear the story about that. And I'm not trying to, or tell me how someone would do that. Let's not make this about you. Tell me how someone would do that.
Right. And I mean, Rick, too, there's such limited education out there in terms of, you know, when you grow up and you're going to school in high school for eating disorder education. So these questions that you're asking are totally valid, and it's great to hear someone really interested in broadening their understanding of what an eating disorder is. So when I talk about bouncing between anorexia and bulimia, and many, many, many sufferers will identify with this, it's almost like you have this arsenal of symptoms. And when we talk about symptom use, we are referring to symptoms like restricting food, a symptom like purging through self-induced vomiting, purging through exercise, purging through laxatives, or a symptom such as a binge. So all of these different symptoms, let's say, are in this arsenal. And you take down one for a while, you restrict for a little while, and then you put that up and you take down binging and purging and use that for a while. Then you put that up and you take down binging. You put that up and then you take down compulsive exercise. So it is just this constant back and forth, just downward spiral of using an array of symptoms, never really landing in, let's say, restriction long enough to meet every single criteria for the diagnosis of anorexia. So you're kind of just going back and forth between all of these symptoms. And at the end of the day, you say, well, I don't really fit into any of these places. And also on top of this, you also have to remember how completely disordered our society is when it comes to health and eating. You know, it is something that every time I went on a new fad diet, it was part of my eating disorder, but it was so praised by everyone that, oh, wow, you have such willpower. You know, it's something that when we see someone in our society lose weight, we automatically have to compliment them, as if weight loss is the key to happiness. And instead, you know, my challenge oftentimes is, especially when I speak to young people, is compliment people on things outside of their appearance. Compliment them on who they are as a person, because that's really what matters.
Is there a difference between an eating disorder and disordered eating? Or are those just the same thing with just slightly different phrasing?
No. It is a very fine line. And, you know, I like our society. This is what I always say. Our society is a disordered eating society. You can have disordered eating and maybe not have a full-blown eating disorder. But oftentimes that will soon develop into a full-blown eating disorder. And the line is constantly blurred and is pretty individual to the person. But anyone that has that disordered eating, I always urge them to seek help and treatment because no one deserves to live like that. Disordered eating is someone that, you know, is consumed by food all day long, you know, thinking like, what am I going to eat? What did I just eat? Maybe what diet I should go on? What I need to lose a few pounds before the holidays. You know, someone that is an intuitive eater, someone that is listening to their body and tune with their body and knowing what their body wants, that is really what we should all strive for. You know, and if we did that, we would be living our best life because we would eat, we would enjoy a meal, and then we would go on about our day. We would enjoy a cookie and then go on about our day instead of living and dying by these confines of diet and the size of our genes and what the scale says.
Again, our guest, McCall Dempsey, you can find her organization at southernsmash.org. McCall, again, thanks for being with us. It is 16 and a half after the hour. We are talking about eating disorders. McCall, we're going to take a break soon, and I feel like this is one of the larger questions. But do schools offer help? And I know that you go to colleges, and we'll get into that. And you've talked about younger ages, which tells me that high school age students are involved. But do schools offer help themselves, or does that fall on the families first that then have to reach to the student, to the schools?
It can happen both ways. And most schools have guidance teams. Whether or not they are well-versed in eating disorders is school-by-school basis. And it can happen that the parents notice first. It can happen that a friend notices first, a teacher. You know, it takes a village for just to raise a kid. And so it takes a village to keep our kids safe and healthy. And so, we try as we go into schools to make sure that all students know that help and support is available and that it's available there on their campus.
Southern Smash travels around to colleges mostly, only?
No, we travel, we hold our skill smashing events at colleges, yes. And then I travel a lot of times if I'm traveling for an event at a college, I will also stop at a few high schools and speak to high schoolers, middle schoolers, fourth and fifth graders. And I also do parent talks with parents on how to raise children with positive body image.
You know what? Let's take our break just a minute early because I haven't allowed you to tell everybody what a scale smashing event is. So let's take our break, and then we'll come back, and I want you to tell everybody what a scale smashing event is, and then we can talk more about the fact that you do it at colleges and fifth grade and beyond. All right? So let's do that.
Great.
All right? So we'll be back in just 30 seconds or so. With McCall Dempsey, she's the founder of Southern Smash. We're talking about eating disorders, and this seems a prime time to do this at the holiday season. So hang tight here at WPVC 94.7 in Charlottesville. And we're back in action here with McCall Dempsey. McCall, thanks for being with us today.
Mm-hmm.
And so, McCall, tell everybody, what is a scale smashing event from Southern Smash?
Well, it is just as you would think it would be. We are smashing bathroom scales with sledgehammers to prove that we are more than a number and we are more than our appearance. However, a Southern Smash event goes far beyond just smashing a scale. Our daytime event is a sequence of activities designed to help free the person from the numbers and thoughts that weigh them down. So you come to the event, you know, we set up on college campuses, right outside a union or quad, high traffic area from in the afternoon, and people just come by and we have an array of different events from the Let It Go balloons to where you write your perfect number on a balloon, whether it's your perfect weight or grades or calories or whatever you're struggling with, whatever is weighing you down that you need to let go of, because we're symbolically, we don't actually let go of the balloons, but we're symbolically letting go of the things that weigh us down. So being the perfect mom, the perfect student, self-harm, depression, anxiety, or boyfriend, biology, whatever it might be. And then we have the Dare to Love Yourself cards, which is my favorite. It is all about positive affirmations, writing down something positive on this card, putting it in your bathroom mirror or in your car where you can see it every day, because we live in a world where we are surrounded with such negativity and negative messages, and this can be our one positive thing. Then we have the scale tombstones where you write your message to your scale. We have fun photo areas that are all body positive, and then, of course, the scale smashing. And typically, especially if I'm coming to the event, we will host a panel talk in the evening, and that is our educational piece where myself, along with clinicians, dietitians, and students in recovery will share their story and talk about topics not just confined to eating disorder, but all about body image, crash dieting, and really how to build one's relationship with food and body.
And how would someone, you were here in Charlottesville on November 7th, mm-hmm. at the Eating Recovery Center. How would somebody, we do put the program up on podcast, how would another school, whether it was a university or if one of the high schools wanted to do it, how would they get in touch with you? What would they need to do to put their own scale smashing event on?
Well, they can just send me an email at mccall@southernsmash.org. And we can just start talking about what they're looking for. We sell smash kits for $500, and those typically are bought by college counseling centers and put on events across the country, because obviously I can't be at every event. I think my husband would kill me. So we have smash kits that enable schools to put on their own event, and we support them with all design work, social media, PR. And then if there are schools or individuals that really want to pay it forward and spread awareness, then we are able to help them either find a sponsor or we're able to give them smash kits. And we do this on individual basis. We never turn anyone away that wants to host a scale smashing event. It was started on, Southern Smash was started for me to pay it forward. And by paying it forward, I have been given 10,000 times more back than I ever imagined, and it is such a healing part of your story when you're able to pay it forward. So we're keeping that ripple effect going by always letting people, giving them the ability for them to pay it forward.
There's this one piece that I saw on your website, again, southernsmash.org, that says, "I love weighing myself, said no one ever." That's my favorite piece. But back to, do schools offer help? You said that aside from going, you don't just go to the colleges and universities. You've been to high schools and even as low, but down to fifth grades, et cetera. So eating disorders can start, fifth grade would be 11 years old, I suppose. So you're talking about, that's quite a young age.
Yes. You know, like I said, you know, eating disorders affect all ages. And when I go into fourth and fifth graders, I'm not necessarily talking eating disorder 101. What the topics there are more centered about health and body image and really what does it mean to be you. And what we want to teach these kids at a young age is that we are all so very different, and that is an awesome, awesome thing, and that we are come in all different colors and all different body sizes. And, you know, and so that's really what I'm advocating for these young kids, and to be kind to each other, because fourth and fifth grade is when kids start to see the difference between the size of their bodies and their friends' bodies and their skin color and their friends' skin color. And so it's really important to really start pushing that message even before fourth and fifth grade, that we are all so different, and that's what makes this world so awesome, and that we can still be really kind to each other.
How do you, how much of this is culture versus, say, family teachings?
Well, eating, are you referring to eating disorders or just societal?
Well, yeah, I mean, I guess we're back to eating disorder.
Okay. Well, so eating disorders are genetically predispositioned illnesses. So a great analogy to understand that is that nature loads the gun, and then something later in life in your environment pulls the trigger. So taking myself, for example, you can have a genetic makeup. They are at the cusp of doing some really amazing research. In fact, UNC, Center for Excellence for Eating Disorders, is spearheading a global study to identify the genes that play a role in anorexia nervosa. And, you know, so we know that there is a genetic component there. We also know that there are personality traits. So my gun was loaded, per se, with the genetic components, and as well as personality traits of being sensitive, being perfectionistic. So all of that started. And then in middle school, I got bullied. And then in high school, I went on a diet that just went wrong, because then it just started to snowball. So you have this kind of perfect little storm. And then when you start to get bullied or you go on that diet, that kind of pulls the trigger. So it is a mix of both your just genetic makeup and then something later in life. And again, like, you can have the genetic makeup for cancer and never develop cancer. You can have the genetic makeup for an eating disorder and never develop it. It's just kind of the perfect storm that comes up.
Again, our guest today, McCall Dempsey from Southern Smash, southernsmash.org. We're talking about eating disorders. Is the holiday season more difficult than the rest of the year?
For someone in recovery or with an eating disorder?
Or does it have to be just in recovery for someone who you said that... I believe the phrase you used was gun was loaded. Is that the phrase you used?
Yeah. I think the holidays can be challenging for all of us. And I think there's so much emphasis on eating and on stuffing yourself and not gaining the holiday weight and all of this focused around, once again, appearance in our society. And then you add in someone that might be predisposed to eating disorder or someone struggling with disordered eating, it is going to be a really difficult time. You know, you're talking about all of the food and the meals and people outside of their comfort zone. So it is, it's a really difficult time. And it's a lot of times when people reach out for treatment, in fact, is during the holidays. I think it's really important to remember that there is no perfect time to get treatment. I actually was in treatment during Christmas and New Year's and all of the holiday season. So there is no perfect time. The perfect time is right now.
But how about the challenge to not fall back? Because can you completely recover?
Yes.
You can. Because when I hear the conversation about someone with an eating disorder, I get the image of alcoholism. Someone who's never fully recovered, who's always challenged. But now I hear from you that that's not true.
So in terms of eating disorder recovery versus alcoholism, there are a lot of similarities and there are a lot of differences. And one of the biggest differences, if not the biggest difference, is alcoholics become sober from their drug. They become sober from alcohol. we cannot become sober from food. So for all intents and purposes, our drug is constantly around us, and we are challenged with that. And so it's not as black and white as just becoming sober, not to diminish the challenges that come with sobriety, certainly. But with eating disorder recovery in the holidays, it is something that the individual has to understand that they are going to have to really pull on their support, whatever their support system looks like, whatever their coping skills are, and remember that. And full recovery from an eating disorder is possible, just like full recovery from sobriety is possible. That you come to a place where what I like to say is that I am fully recovered, and I will always be working towards recovery, because recovery for me is this journey of self-discovery. And I really never want to stop challenging myself to be my best self. And that is how I define my recovery. And eating disorder recovery is something that I always tell people that they have to learn how to define it for themselves, in terms of whether they say that they are going to be fully recovered, whether they're still struggling with those urges or voices. It is such an individual thing, but certainly full recovery is possible.
So as we talk about eating disorders with McCall Dempsey from Southern Smash, I'm just curious. I continue to learn things from McCall. McCall, do you visit these colleges and these universities? How many women and men do you have? I mean, do you teach classes when you're there? Do you find organizations that start because of your visit or soon after your visit?
No, we don't do classes. We do our panel discussion in the evening. So I guess that is kind of like a one-time class, but it's really interactive and an open discussion. And then we partner. There are all kinds of amazing organizations on college campuses that aren't just, some are focused on eating disorder education and awareness, and then some are just focused on like a women's center or LGBTQ, you know. So we're always partnering with these phenomenal organizations on campus to not only broaden our reach, but to bring others in to help support whatever groups and efforts are happening on that campus.
So during our discussion now, it's 33 minutes after the hour. I haven't heard conversation much about men with an eating disorder. You've mentioned transgender.
Yes.
But little about men. Do men not have the same or have a much less rate of eating disorder because of whether it's genetic or cultural?
One in 10 men, one out of every 10 sufferers is a man. And you also have to remember that that is a probably really low ball guess, because there is such a stigma with men seeking help for an eating disorder. When I go into various treatment centers across the country and spend time with patients, is my favorite thing to do, a good majority of the population, if not close to half, are men of all ages. So we are seeing more and more men seek treatment, which is awesome, but there's still a lot of education and awareness that needs to happen. There is also a higher prevalence for those men in the transgender and the LGBTQ population in terms of eating disorders.
And that falls back to the genetic issue?
Both. Like I said, it's a predisposition illness. So the genetic component, as well as something later in life in your environment. So those that are going through a transition, that are coming into their own, whether it's, you know, in terms of sexuality or who they are, that can be a really big environmental factor.
And when we step forward for treatment, is this counseling? Is this you went away for therapy? Tell me about how you went away for help.
So I sought help in an outpatient setting with a therapist and a nutritionist at first. And after about a year of working with therapists, it was clear that I needed a higher level of care. And I went to the Carolina House, which is a residential treatment facility in Durham, North Carolina, for adults 17 and up. I stayed there for 3 months and did the really hard work that comes with going to treatment and the really hard work that comes with leaving treatment and continuing working with an outpatient team on a weekly basis, actually twice a week. So that's my length of stay in treatment.
What about pharmaceuticals and drugs? And if not for you, do you have any belief in those now?
Oh, absolutely. No, I think Zoloft should be in the water. I think there is, again, there's this stigma, and I was certainly like anti taking any type of SSRI medication, but that it can be such a turning point and a helpful tool in recovery. What I always tell people that are, you know, hesitant to take the psychiatrist recommendation for an SSRI or whatever it might be is that they would never second guess taking ibuprofen if they had a headache, or they would never second guess taking chemotherapy if they had cancer. This is no different. You know, that there is something happening in our brain. We need a medicine to help us along, so we take it. You know, anything, our brain, I think it's so important to remember, our brain is part of the body just like any other organ. And if our other organs are hurting, we take medicine. And if our brain is hurting, we need to take medicine as well.
Again, our guest today, McCall Dempsey. She's the founder and executive director of Southern Smash, as we sit here and talk about eating disorders today on WPVC 94.7, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. McCall, as you've traveled for how many years now?
5 years.
5 years. At what rate has Southern Smash grown in terms of, the word that comes to mind is acceptance, and that's not the right word, visits to universities and colleges where instead of you calling them, they have called you?
I mean, I don't have a number to throw on that.
That's okay. I'm not asking for a specific.
I think, you know, when I started it, I started with this wild idea, and I would literally just show up on a campus and say, this is what I want to do, and it's going to be really fun. And I'd have to kind of convince them. And then now it's awesome because, you know, we have partnerships and we're supported by treatment centers across the country. And schools reach out to us on a daily basis, and it's just, or if there's a treatment center that says, hey, let's do an event, we're hoping to get one out in LA next year, you know, so let's we have some contacts at UCLA, let's give them a call. And typically it's great. It just kind of flows from there because people have heard of us or they see what we've done and they're like, absolutely. So it's really exciting because I think what draws people into Southern Smash is that it is not, you know, I'm not sitting behind a table handing out pamphlets for Eating Disorder 101. It is something really engaging, interactive, that every single person can get something out of. Whether or not you struggle with an eating disorder, we all know what it feels like to not feel good enough in our skin. Not necessarily in a body image type way, but in any type of way. And that's what our event does. It allows people to free themselves from the things that really weigh them down.
All right, so time for our second break, about 40 minutes after the hour. We'll be back in just a few seconds with McCall Dempsey. McCall, hang on. And back in action with McCall Dempsey as we talk about eating disorders. Sunday after Thanksgiving, Southern Smash in action. SouthernSmash.org. You can also find McCall Dempsey's blog, McCall, that's with two C's, M-C-C-A-L-L, Dempsey.com. That's her blog, McCallDempsey.com. Although not always about eating disorders, right, McCall?
Correct.
Although you did tell me that they were tied together. The blog prompted Southern Smash. Take a couple minutes and tell us about that.
Sure. When I left treatment, I started a blog, but I didn't share it with anyone because I was still really ashamed of my story and embarrassed by it. But I started it because I needed a place to connect with others who were sharing in my same struggles in recovery. And I did not have any group support. I was living in Baton Rouge, Louisiana at the time, and so I found support on an online community. About a year or so later, I shared a blog entry with a friend and about our friendship, and she said, "You have to let me put this on Facebook," and I said, "Oh, gosh, no," and sure enough, she bugged me all day, and at the end of the day, I let her put it on, and after that, my Facebook inbox was filled with messages saying, "Thank you, McCall, for sharing. I struggled with anorexia for many years. Thank you for sharing. I struggled with bulimia. I struggled with alcoholism, with drug addiction. Thank you for sharing. You know, all those years we thought you had it all together. It's so nice to know you didn't." That's my favorite one. You know, it's just so such a perfect thing for all those years that I had tried so hard to be perfect and look like life was just fine. And all anyone ever wanted for me is to be who I was and be true to myself. And so at that moment, I knew I had to keep writing, and then a group at LSU asked me to come and speak, and that's when I said, "Well, I have this crazy idea to do a scale smash, but I really want to make it into a really fun event and party," and they were all in, and so that's when Southern Smash was born on November 16, 2012.
Is that a blog about... How many articles about blog, or and how frequently does... your current blog talk about Southern Smash, or do I need to go to the SouthernSmash.org site to read about Southern Smash?
I mean, you can read about them on both places. My blog does have a Southern Smash tab, and it'll take you to Southern Smash. The best place to keep up with Southern Smash is on our Facebook page. We're constantly posting educational articles, you know, all of our events and information. We work hard to keep our website up to date, of course, too, and we're on all social media. The blog itself will talk about Southern Smash in that I oftentimes write after events. I write a lot after I visit treatment centers. I don't have a schedule per se. I'm not a blogger that says, you know, I have to blog every Monday. I blog when I am just feeling really passionate about something or something has just really struck me and I just need to write about it. And my blog still, it was started as a therapeutic tool and to this day remains a really therapeutic tool for me personally. It's just something that a lot of people have started to, you know, enjoy reading, which is awesome, but I certainly still write for myself.
But your blog is... You said deeply passionate. It's also not that Southern Smash is not. It's also very incredibly personal.
Yes.
And so when we want to see something about Southern Smash that isn't going out amongst the crowd and helping others themselves with smashing scales and releasing their own numbers, but we want to be reminded about your numbers and the person who started Southern Smash with her own disorder and going back to the beginning are there some things on McCall Dempsey's blog that we can occasionally find about that?
About starting Southern Smash?
Yeah. On the McCall Dempsey blog, can we find some things about Southern Smash, the deeply passionate part, the deeply personal part that we can find about Southern Smash?
Oh, of course. Yeah. You can go back to probably around 2012, 2013, and there's, I think I wrote a ton about different events and starting it and being scared out of my mind, but I had never been so sure of anything in my life. And, you know, talking all about the people that I had met. There's many blogs about when I visit to different treatment centers, about patients, not giving names, of course, but just my experiences there and my experiences at different Smash events and people that touched me and their stories and whatnot.
Great. Thank you. So again, mm-hmm. McCall Dempsey, the founder of Southern Smash, as we talk about eating disorders today. One of the things that you said very early in the show is that the brain is part of the body.
Yes.
I want to talk about mental health for a little bit. We do have, we only have about 12 minutes left in the hour. What does health insurance do? Does health insurance help either the physical part or the mental part of the body in terms of eating disorders?
Insurance is yes and no. First, let me back up. The brain is part of the body is a quote that I steal all the time from Senator Patrick Kennedy, who is a mental health champion on Capitol Hill. The Eating Disorder Coalition is doing phenomenal work in lobbying for equal access to care for treatment. What happens when folks go to treatment centers? For example, in my case, I had insurance. And like I said, I didn't technically have weight to gain, per se, because I was within a normal range, but my labs were off because of all of the eating disorder abuse to my body. As soon as my labs became, quote-unquote, stable, the insurance powers that be said, okay, you can go home now, where that isn't the goal of treatment. The goal of treatment isn't just getting the body healthy. You then have to start doing the really hard work on the mental part of it. And my husband and I made the really hard decision that we basically went broke paying for my treatment. But so many people don't have that option, and they're forced to go home. And it's a terrible, terrible thing because insurance, it is so frustrating because they are not seeing this as a mental health issue. They are seeing this as a physical only, okay, everything checks off, you're good to go, you don't need this level of care. And your fate can be decided by someone that you've never even met before. And that's certainly what is happening oftentimes. The Anna Weston Act is something. It is the first eating disorder language to be placed in the 21st Century Cures Act, which was signed into law by President Obama last year. And that was all done by Kitty Weston, who is one of the most amazing women I've ever met. She lost her daughter Anna to an eating disorder and vowed to really make a difference and to honor her daughter's memory. And so what the Anna Weston Act does is say that eating disorder insurance companies have to uphold the parity law. So if they're going to treat at this physical issue at this level, then they need to treat the mental issue at an equal level, right? So basically finding equality in physical issues and mental health issues. So it is still a battle, but they're making big strides. And we go up and we have lobby day twice a year. Eating Disorder Coalition is the champion behind that. Joanna Candel, Chase Bannister, they're a freaking rock star. So it's something that if anyone wants to get involved in, they can look into the Eating Disorder Coalition. Everyone is welcome to come to lobby day. We are always looking for more advocates, and it's a great way to use your voice.
And when is lobby day? How do they find out more about that?
You can go to eatingdisordercoalition.org, I believe, or just Google Eating Disorder Coalition. I don't have it in front of me right now. But Lobby Day is typically the first week in October. There's a day in the first week in October, and then they usually do one in March or April. And so you go, you sign up. I think you have to pay like $20. It's a very nominal fee. You are trained in the morning, so you're not just flying blind into senators' offices. You're trained in the morning. You have your group. So I now live in Florida, so I go with the Florida group. And you speak to your congressmen and women, to your senators, and their representatives, and you tell them your story. And you say, this is what happened to me, and this isn't right. And that's how we have our voices to be heard. And that is exactly how the Anna Weston language was placed into the 21st Century Cures Act.
Our guest today, McCall Dempsey, we're talking about eating disorders. McCall is the founder of Southern Smash. So McCall, we're talking about the mental health part of eating disorders, a little bit about the physical part of health insurance. But what I was hearing there is that the health insurance part, not very key into helping solve eating disorders.
Correct.
Is there, I mean, you're already planning for next October. I caught that. Was there anything that was, you know, done for the Affordable Care Act? This is WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. We have a lot to say about the current presidential administration and on other programs. We won't take up your time on this topic with getting into that too much. But in terms of, you know, mental health, do the eating disorders, I mean, is it focused on that? Does, I don't know how to phrase this without getting carried away into another topic when we only have about 5 minutes left. Does, you know, if you cure the eating disorder, does mental health go into somewhere else? Does a mental health issue move into another problem?
Okay, I see what you're saying. You know, if you become recovered from your eating disorder, do you then struggle with a different mental health diagnosis?
Thank you. Yes.
Okay. Not necessarily. It can, you know, there is a lot of comorbidity when you're talking about addiction, substance abuse, alcoholism, and eating disorders. So it can, you know, there are many people that are in recovery from eating disorder and sober. So a lot of times people, you know, there are a lot of stories out there. In fact, the Eating Recovery Center, who is our sponsor at UVA, they have a great podcast called Mental Health Note. And in fact, Ellie just posted a new episode with a woman who struggled with substance abuse or alcoholism and eating disorder. And what would happen is that she would just flow between the two, right? So she would be sober for a while, but struggle with the eating disorder. And then it would flip to be okay with food and then struggle with alcoholism. So it was just kind of like ping-ponging back and forth. So that certainly can happen. You know, I think the greatest thing about recovery, and this is what I always tell people, is that I am never going to be, you know, something bad is never going to happen in my life again, right? The best thing that I can ever do, I don't know, I might come down tomorrow with bipolar. I don't know. I cannot predict the future. But what I can do is that I can be aware of where I am, what I'm feeling, and I can take note of that, and I can seek help and support. So I think that's the most important thing to always remember, is that we can't predict if we're going to get cancer. We can't predict if we're going to come down with another mental illness. But what we can do is be aware of what we're thinking and feeling, and that in order to live our best life, that we need to be aware of that and to continually seek help and support as needed, and to really smash that stigma that it's a weakness, because it's not. It's a strength. It means that you want to take care of yourself, just like if you're sick, you're going to go to the doctor. It's no different.
I love how you use the word smash so many times in so many different ways for so many different questions. You know, one of the other things that I did learn in preparation for the show, but let's bring it up before the hour is over, is we've talked about anorexia, we've talked about bulimia, we've talked about binge eating as eating disorders, but we haven't talked about obesity.
Okay.
Not everybody realizes that technically obesity isn't an eating disorder, correct?
That it is not.
Is that correct?
Oh, well, obesity is just a label of someone's weight and size. And someone can technically be obese and actually be in their normal health range or weight range. So we have this obesity epidemic that everyone wants to, like, oh my gosh, you know, run from. And It's not an obesity epidemic. It's an epidemic of a society that can't slow down and take care of themselves. And not all people are designed to be a very small size. You know, some people are going to come in larger shape bodies. And there is a notion out there that everyone should look up. It's called Health at Every Size, HAES. It is where the real facts about health and nutrition are, because we're not all meant to be Barbies, right, and Kens. We're meant to live in our bodies within our set point of weight range. Our set point of weight range might be higher than what we want, but guess what? That's where our bodies are going to optimally function. So a perfect example was, I was in the grips of an eating disorder. I had one of those BMI test things done, and I was clinically, on the BMI chart, obese. Did I look obese? No. There are people out there who are severely underweight and are maybe not an eating disorder underweight, but they are, you know, thin body and they are high blood pressure, cholesterol, all this other stuff. Then you have someone who might be in a larger body. Maybe they're obese. I don't know. But guess what? They have a great cholesterol, great blood pressure. They take care of their body. They move their body. They rest their body. They nourish their body. And they are so healthy, but society deems them obese, unhealthy, lazy, whatever other stereotypical adjectives you want to throw on that one. So it is such a misconceived, annoying issue with our society. There is not an obesity epidemic.
All right. 15 seconds left, McCall. I'll give that to you. What would you like to head us out with in terms of information?
I just want to say, thank you, first of all, in that there is no right way to have an eating disorder or to have any type of problem in your life, and that if you are suffering in any capacity or not living the life you deserve to seek help and treatment, and that reaching out is the hardest step, and it's the first step, but it is the best step and the most important. So never be afraid to reach out so that you can be living your best life.
McCall Dempsey, she's the founder of Southern Smash. McCall, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you.
All right. Next week, Bob Gibson from UVA's Center of Politics, and we'll be talking about the results of the election back in early November. Take care, everybody.
This has been the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call on 94.7, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. The Wake-Up Call is brought to you by Tiger Fuel and the markets of Tiger Fuel. Production assistance and engineering from Sean McCord and Mike Friend. Be sure to join Rick next Sunday morning at 11 a.m. for the Wake-Up Call, only on WPVC-LP Charlottesville.